Come back and bring back my smile. Come and take. Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to Talking the Blues. What can we say? Third successive defeat, 3-1 to Manchester United. And for my two fine friends, Andy and George, the worst possible result against the worst possible team. Over to you, chaps.
What a shit show. I think that's the first time I've used deplorable language on Talking the Blues, but I'm afraid that today was the absolute pits. You know, we've heard for so many years that teams can't play in Europe on a Thursday and then come back and play. United didn't only play on Thursday, they were awful on Thursday, they lost on Thursday, they've come back, done nothing but whinge about having to play today, and then gone out and consummately made Everton look stupid. Just embarrassing for Everton Football Club that we can go down with such a whimper after a relatively bright start, you know, and... I mean, as you said, Paul, in the intro, for us, it's even worse being Mancunians, but dear God, that was gutless, in my opinion, from Everton Football Club today. You know, I'm struggling to think of any player who comes out of that game with any real credit. And just about the only one I can think of is DCL for working his socks off again with no service, no support. Just very annoyed at today. Very annoyed, let's put it like that.
Right. We'll get into the details in a few minutes. George, your thoughts, initial thoughts at least.
Sorry, say that again, Paul.
Your initial thoughts.
I didn't think it was as bad as Andy said. I was astonished at how open the game was. Which, you know, was suicidal, really, because United have got some very fast players, particularly Rashford, who enjoyed himself. I didn't think they were gutless. I thought there was a deal more effort than there was against Newcastle.
Bro, we're up against a side that's as low on confidence as we are. We should have come out of the blocks and got stuck straight into them. Hard, fast, non-stop. We should have gone for the jugular right from the off, and we didn't. They had the best of the opening. They had the best of the opening 5 minutes. You know, they could have gone a goal up before we actually got down the other end of the field, and made the chance that DCL put the header over the bar, and then we took the lead, and we still didn't put the foot on the throat.
That's true, you know, Andy. Yeah.
There was no pace. There was no intensity. I'm sorry. I'm just seething about that performance. I really am. I saw precious little in it to give us any hope. We've had a cracking start to the season, and it's evaporated in three games.
And I would say that period of distress is over because Richarlison will be back and the balance will be in the team. The team will be a proper threat. The problem has been that we've taken out the most potent player we've got, and I include DCL in that. Richarlison is the most potent player we've got, and I bet you if you lined up Harry Maguire and Dick Van Dyke and all the rest of them went, who would you rather mark, DCL or Richarlison? They go, DCL, please, thank you. But he's been gone, and we've lost all three games, and I fully expect us to win next week when he's back. But it was, Hammers was, you know, not really at the races. But I thought a lot of people put a shift in, but, you know, what does it matter? We lost to United. It's the worst feeling in the world. The warning signs for me, what bothered me was, even before we'd scored, was how slowly we played out from the back. Now, this is not Seamus or Dinia, both of whom were expansive today and tried hard. This is Keane and Holgate. I have my doubts about Holgate, and I shall be glad when Mr. Branthwaite steps up. But anyway, that's just by the by. But both of them brought the ball out from defence and did a whole pile of, oh, I'm going to play a defence-splitting pass, watch me. Oh, no, I'm just going to play it square. Well, if you're going to play it square, for God's sake, play it square quicker.
Yeah. Where's the pace?
Where's
the tempo in the game?
Well, you know, Andy, you know, you're going to get back to the Sigurdsson debate as well. What was he doing? I had no idea. Why was he playing further back than Decore? I had no idea what was going on. And then finally, you know, and I will hold my hands up and say I thought Iwobi was an improvement on what he's been and what he and who he came on for. But this, if I ever see Tosin in a blue shirt again, I'll have to give it up. What is the point? I don't understand Ancelotti's thinking. And if it is part of a larger debate about I'm not going to trust a young, untried kid like Joel Sims, I'm going to put a complete donkey on the pitch who's now got booked without touching the ball in two matches. That must be a world record. He's not quick enough to get to the ball, so he just fouls somebody and gets booked two games in a row. He's rubbish. And it's infuriating when he comes on, you know, and you can't help but notice that they bring on Pogba and Cavani. That's a different thing.
There was a world of difference between the benches, the quality on the benches, and the threat from the bench.
But, you know, we are in a rebuilding period, and now we're back off the top of the table. We're back to, you know, 6th, 7th, 8th, and falling, and then lots of... But I do think the return of Richarlison will make a most enormous difference to all of them. I think the whole team will go, yeah, come on, we'll give you a game now. We've been a bit one-legged without him. But, you know, for me and you, and there are a few others, to lose to that lot and to know that the crowing and the, but that's just tough. That's just the just the downside of geography, that you were born in Manchester and ended up a Blue.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I was a bit overreactive, but I'm just frustrated by Everton at the minute. I really am. I mean, I know we're missing Richarlison, and he is a big loss, but come on, we've got a squad of players, you know, and we've got a vastly experienced manager who surely should be able to adjust the squad better than he has done with the, you know, for the performances in the three games that Richarlison's been missing.
Well, you have to say, Andy, that's a fair thing to say, and on the evidence of my eyes and your eyes and Paul's eyes and everybody else who's listening to this, he didn't. And for me, it's because he's not got the quality on the bench. And so this is another rebuilding season, and there'll be maybe some shopping in January, but there's a quality level that he has to rise to. Things will be different with Richarlison, but, you know, Richarlison got suspended. He could have got injured.
Yeah.
We can't fall apart like that when one person comes out of the team. But the fact of the matter is, he has no replacement. And anybody who thinks that Tosin is a replacement for anything other than a faulty boiler, I don't know what planet they're on.
Look,
what was your take, Paul?
I think you're both right to degrees. I can feel the frustration seeping out of you, Andy.
That's generous.
Yeah,
he stood in a puddle, you know.
I think Ancelotti's caught between a sort of rock, a bit of a rock and a hard place, and clearly he of all people should be able to solve this problem, but he clearly doesn't have a great deal of confidence in our defensive capabilities at this moment in time. So, you know, he set us up quite negatively to be playing at home today. And, you know, playing DCL up by himself is a throwback to last season. So it seemed to me, just as in the previous game, he wanted to keep it tight, not concede a goal, look to score through a long ball up to DCL, or perhaps look to score from, you know, a decent delivery from a dead ball. So I don't think he's quite worked out how to play us, how to have sufficient defensive capabilities to be a bit more expansive up the field. I think teams have worked out that if you keep DCL quiet, if you don't concede too many free kicks in their own half, you deny Everton the opportunity to hit a dead ball. And the dead balls, they were rubbish, but generally speaking, they're pretty good. Everton don't score goals.
True.
And
the set pieces today were chronic. I couldn't understand why Sigurdsson, when Sigurdsson went over to take that first corner, I thought, why? He hasn't taken a decent corner for three seasons.
Yeah.
And we've got Rodriguez, who generally puts the ball at least into a dangerous area. And Sigurdsson's first corner hit the first man and was cleared. And I thought, here we go. What's all that about? But in general today, I
assume that you guys, even though we're all looking at different channels, we all get the same stream of pictures. There was a couple of times when the Everton bench just looked totally appalled.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ancelotti's, I actually made a note of it in my match report that Ancelotti was getting animated on the touchline at the lack of quality of set pieces and whatever. It's just annoying.
Well, over there, the ref had a shocker.
Well, he caved into everything that, you know, I mean, Fernandez got away with murder at times today.
I'm afraid he did. He should have been sent off, really.
Yeah.
I mean, Dino got sent off for a good deal less than that.
Mm-hmm.
Fernandez is...
But anyway, that's just whining and being a sad United hater.
Well...
Look, Fernandez is...
Yeah, because in fairness, Keane had a good go at Maguire's knee, didn't he? Oh, dear me. There's another discussion in there, the VAR. I mean, I've got to be honest, I thought that one when Pickford dropped the cross and both him and Keane clattered into Maguire, and I thought to myself, that's an absolute nailed-on pen. And when you see it from the various angles that the VAR official's seeing it from, I'm absolutely amazed that that wasn't given. I'm glad it wasn't, but I'm amazed it wasn't.
Andy, was there not a foul on Pickford beforehand?
Yeah, right?
Maguire had his hand on his chest.
He handed him off. That's where Pickford dropped it.
Oh, right. OK, fair enough. I'll be honest. It's a
poor day when two Everton defenders go to clatter Harry Maguire and he survives. I mean, what's going on? Survives enough to, you know...
Where was
done.
Sandy Brown and Jimmy Gabriel when you wanted them?
Oh, dear.
Look, Andy, you said that there was no... You thought there was nobody on the pitch that came out with any credit. I'm going to disagree slightly. I'm going to say that I think Bernard probably had his best game for Everton.
He had a decent first half. He was non-existent second half for me.
Right. But you know, for once he looked dangerous when he got on the ball, and
his early link-up play with Dina was fine.
Yeah,
and he took his goal well and everything. I thought first half, I thought he was fine. He was involved and he was hungry for the ball. I didn't see too much of that second half, unfortunately. And then obviously he began to get frustrated because he wasn't seeing much of the ball, and when he did, you know, nothing was working for the boy. You know, you're probably right. It probably was arguably one of his best games for Everton. But
I think in the second half, when Ancelotti sort of allowed James to just go wherever he wanted to go, I think we lost an awful lot of our shape, because actually, you know, we shaped up even though we had DCL up by himself. Defensively, we didn't look like as if we were in too bad a shape, particularly in the first half. I think in the second half, I think we lost a lot of that potency just by having Hammers like basically going wherever every light. And you know, let's be honest, he didn't have a good game.
None of the midfield had a good game. I mean, the box to box that we were looking for from Doucouré didn't appear today at all, as it largely failed to appear at Southampton and Newcastle as well. And you know, Alan put himself about, but I don't know. Maybe Richarlison really is the key to this side, because since we lost him, obviously against Liverpool, you know, everything's gone pear shaped.
It's because he offers it's because he's a big, big threat, and so whatever defence you're playing against is split. Because they're going, watch him as well. Whereas today, as we've all just said, Maguire and Lindelof went, yeah, well, they'll lump it towards DCL and one of us will deal with it.
Well, you know, even in the first half, DCL positioned himself up against Lindelof. In the second half, Maguire saw much more of the ball defensively.
Yeah.
So, you know, we went at the races, but we weren't even clever in terms of how we played.
No.
It was like a collective absence of direction and thought and certainly of leadership. There was...
That's the essence of what this conversation is about, I think, Paul. Alan is a really good football player. He's a destructive football player, but he can play a bit. Doucouré is a reactive football player. I'll challenge him. I'll get it. I'll do this. I'll do that. The other. The real players in that team are Sigurdsson and Gomez, and neither of them are at the races. What the hell was Doucouré doing on the end of those two big shots in the last 5 minutes? He shouldn't have been there. That's what Sigurdsson's good at. So the whole thing just went kind of pear-shaped, really. I was glad to see Doucouré stay on the pitch, and he worked so hard, and it was touching to see how disappointed he was with the shot he blazed over the bar. But frankly, it should not have been him on the end of it. But Gomez is losing pace, and you know, by then he'd already hooked Guilfi, and I'm sure there weren't many of the Cyber fans going, oh, I don't think you should do that, Carlo.
No.
No. I mean,
I think the sands of time on Guilfi with the vast majority of Blues are fast running out. You know, I think we said at the start of the season. I'm certain I said at the start of the season I was prepared to give him a second chance, because I thought with the addition of Doucouré and Rodriguez and Alan in the midfield, it would give Sigurdsson the opportunity to play the way that we know he can play, and he just sadly hasn't. It hasn't materialised either for the side or for him, and he appears to have gone back into the shell where he was.
Look at the difference between him and Fernandes. Fernandes was constantly available, going, give me the ball.
Yeah.
Sigurdsson was going, well, why don't you pass it over there? Oh yeah, good. I don't know. And you know, it's interesting what you said in one of your texts. Here we are. We just played three games. We scored two goals, conceded seven, picked up God knows how many yellow cards and a couple of reds as well. And these are the fine margins of between success and failure.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need a win now to get some confidence back. And once the confidence come back, then men like Sigurdsson find that, you know, that tiny fraction of a quarter of a yard that makes him more potent. But playing on the halfway line, I don't think is the right place for him. He's a great shooter. We don't actually have a great shooter on that pitch today, except him. And he was nowhere near the goal. In fact, that was the worst performance we've given all season in terms of shots on goal.
Yeah, yeah, there's only four or five shots on goal. And only one on target, which was the goal.
Yeah, did De Gea save it?
De Gea didn't make a save.
No, didn't need to.
No.
But that's what I don't understand, you know. Fair play, you know, Doucouré's still there, still getting on the end of things, but he's the wrong person. You know, that's not his gift, is it? We didn't buy him because of the 20, no. you know, the 15
no, exactly.
goals.
Nobody was expecting double figures from him at all. You know, it's like you say, but he's you want him to be the energy in midfield that will cover the area between the two boxes.
He did that all right today.
Yeah.
He was, you know, he's still going, but I could not understand that as the game went on, why is Sigurdsson playing behind him? Anyway, you need to... Where is Carlo? Have you got his number? Because we're just going round in circles here every week trying to figure out what's going on.
Well, we are for the last 3 weeks, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I, you know...
What about the decision to bring Holgate back in?
I think there's probably two questions there, isn't there? Did he think it was the right game because he was hoping United were going to be tired after their midweek jaunt to Turkey and back? Or does he just not fancy Mina? I mean, ultimately, it's proved not the right decision because Holgate didn't cover himself in glory.
And both goals came from a hole in the middle of the defence.
Yeah, there was big space between him and Keane on both the goals in the first half.
Yeah,
sure.
Although I think to be fair to Holgate, on the first goal, it was actually Keane that was out of position rather than Holgate, because Keane was way too far over to the left or to his right. He was the one. I thought he was the one out of position. Now, you could argue that maybe somebody should have picked up the run, but that's not the central defender's job to pick up the run. You know, that's a midfielder's job.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you're playing, you know, with a couple of defensive midfielders in your team, you're expecting them to pick up the run from the edge of the penalty box. But I don't think Holgate was at fault for the first goal. I think he looked... I wouldn't say he didn't look match fit, but he didn't look sort of match sharp. If you understand what I'm saying, he looked rusty. He looked like a player that has been out for a long time,
which he has. That's his first game of the season.
Absolutely, yeah. And
he
apparently
he hasn't played since the Blackpool game, has he?
Yeah.
In the pre-season.
No, in the pre-season, yeah.
Mm.
So, you know, if. Going back to one of the earlier comments that we made before, that if Angelotti's thinking was, I don't want to concede a goal in this game, I want to keep a clean sheet, well, bringing Holgate back in tells you an awful lot about how he feels about Mina.
Mm. Yep.
Yes. I mean,
although, you know, he does talk a lot about rotating and, you know, Pickford, Olsen, Pickford. So why not Mina, Holgate, Mina? And, you know, during the week he sees that Holgate is match fit and, you know, can hold down a position. And I suppose he needs to know in his own mind, what is my best pairing at centre-half?
Well, I hope he decides...
Do you know what his best pairing at centre-half is?
Right now, I suspect that Carlo thinks it's Keane and Holgate. But when everybody's fit, I suspect it might come down. I suspect it might go another way. I really do. We've not seen Godfrey yet in a centre half position.
No.
And we've got Branthwaite to come back in. I suspect Branthwaite. Won't come back in, but I think it'll be interesting to see how quickly Carlo decides to give Godfrey a run at centre half. In place of who, I'm not quite sure, because he's been very loyal. Pardon?
Well, let me just pose this question: the only natural left-footed centre half we've got is Branthwaite.
Right.
Mina, Keane and Holgate are all right-footed.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect Branthwaite plus another is going to be more physically balanced, although, you know, the kid's 19 or something, isn't he?
Yeah.
So, The first time I noticed that Mina wasn't there was when we got a free kick and Rodriguez went to take it, and he went, "Ooh, where's Mina? Oh, he's not there."
Yeah.
And, you know, Holgate has...
Well, like you said, it'll be interesting when Branthwaite's fully fit. Will he come back in? Like you say, if he's the only natural left-footed centre half we've got, then he should provide some degree of balance.
You would hope so.
But it's who plays on the right then? Is it Keane? Is it Holgate? Or is it Mina?
Of those three, I would give that to Keane every time.
Yeah. Right now, I mean, he's shown a lot of faith in Michael Keane as Carlo Ancelotti, and up till today, I think Keane has responded to that faith. Whether he's there for the long term, only time will tell. But it's interesting that we're talking about Holgate and Branthwaite as the two youngest members of the back four, if you like, or potentially two youngest members, when, you know, the discussion about as Ancelotti got faith in the youth, it's bound to get raised again with no Gordon and no Sims being given an opportunity. I mean, you know, if going into today's game he thought United were going to be tired, then some youthful energy might have been an idea. But
you're really going to have to explain to me why you would choose Tosin above Gordon. I've completely forgotten about
Tosin. I didn't say Tosin.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
Oh, sorry.
If you're picking a bench and you know, you're opening up the debate about are we right in beginning to assume that Carlo Ancelotti has less faith in youth than he does in experience, which is, you know, his prerogative as the manager of the club. But there's no way you can tell me that Tosin is a better bet off the bench than Gordon. I'm not buying it.
No, I'd agree with that. I'd have had Gordon there. I mean, what we've seen of Gordon this year, he's been quick and he's been direct as well. He's wanted to get forward, and he's wanted to get forward in a hurry, which is something that we desperately need in a minute because we're lacking in pace.
Yeah, it's interesting about Gordon because this wasn't said to me directly, but it was said to somebody else. Whom I know, and they were told by somebody that's in the game that they've seen players with far more ability than Gordon not make the game.
Right.
That perhaps Gordon isn't the solution that we're looking for.
Carlo played him at the back end of last season and then rewarded him with a new contract.
Oh, yep. I get all of that. I'm just passing on the comment.
Yeah.
Maybe Ancelotti's had a different sort of. Maybe he now thinks differently. Who knows? I think from my perspective, and I'm just a football fan. I don't really do football tactics or anything else. I get a feeling that. Carlo doesn't know his best side and doesn't know the best positions for every player.
Well, he's obviously got the conundrum in the back four with the centre half situation. I think we all know that Ndinho and Coleman, those are his starting fullbacks. There's no doubt about that, and he clearly sees Pickford as his number one.
Yep. But could you readily identify a style of football that Everton have played under Ancelotti?
No.
Has there been a consistency of formation? Now I know you can make tactical tweaks, you know, depending upon who it is that you're playing and who's available in your own side. But you can't really say at this moment in time. I can't really say at this moment in time. I know what an Ancelotti team is.
Well, presumably they change with every new set of personnel that he gets, then. Isn't that the skill of it, that you adapt to what you've got? I mean, I'm trying to remember back to wasn't he manager of Chelsea when they beat us in the cup final?
No.
It was 2012, wasn't it? He was
Gus Hiddink.
Yeah.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I'm going to cancel that thread. If you could edit that out so I don't look like a dick.
it may be that he just, you know, the players aren't doing it for him. I don't know, but there's either Ancelotti's not got it right in his own mind yet, what the system is and how, you know, exactly how he should be playing, or the players aren't delivering for him, you know, having trained all week. I mean, you know, there was a point in the second half towards the end of the game when you could hear Ancelotti shouting, "No foul, no foul, no foul." And what did we do? We foul a player 30 yards from our own goal. So is it perhaps that the players themselves are not doing what's asked or expected of them?
Well, I have no idea how we answer that. And I've been a football fan for a very long time. And I'm no nearer having the answer. I have no idea.
Surely if the manager's out there on the training field with them 3-4 days a week and everything on the training field looks okay and he uses that knowledge to select his side, obviously having looked at who the potential opposition is, how the opposition are potentially going to line up, then he selects his side. If they then go out and patently either forget everything that he's suggested to them should be the game plan, or ignore it, or woefully put it into operation, then he has to make changes. Surely.
Well, he does make changes, Andy, to be fair to him. He's not afraid to ring the changes.
Yes, he'll make changes during the game. I'm talking about being radical with his starting lineup. I mean, I think we all could have predicted that starting lineup today.
Yeah.
I don't think there was any shock in that starting lineup whatsoever. And I just think maybe it's time, you know, maybe some of them really do need a kick up the backside. You know, obviously, I mean, when Richarlison's going to be available for the Fulham game in 2 weeks' time after the international break. So he's going to be the first name on the team sheet, probably, on today. He's going to be at the behest of either Bernard or Sigurdsson, you would think.
Are we playing at Fulham or at Goodison?
It's at Fulham.
Right, so he'll play 4-4-2.
You would hope so. So he'll put Richarlison up front with DCL, and then the midfield will be Alan Decore, Rodriguez, and A.N. Other, whether it's Bernard, Sigurdsson, Gomez, Gordon, Davis, or Iwobi even. You know, but I don't know. I just think, you know, if we have another lacklustre performance in 2 weeks' time, then I think I'd be tempted to really shake things up and say, right, okay, bring Ellis Sims in, bring him in, let's stick him up front. Not for DCL, obviously, alongside DCL. I just think we're at a point where we might have to try something radical, because we've had a good start and it's fizzled out. All right, it's fizzled out because we lost Richarlison, and he is a huge element of our team. But you know, we can't. Do we seriously think that when Richarlison comes back against Fulham, that everything that's gone in the last 3 weeks is going to go out the window, and we'll go back to where we were playing when we played, you know, West Ham in the Carabao Cup and blew them away? When we stuck five past West Brom.
I think there's a possibility of that, Andy, yeah. Because of collective...
Well, I hope so, our kid.
Well, all it will prove is that the team feels more confident with Richarlison in it. They must have known when Richarlison got the three-match ban that their chances of scoring a lot of goals in the next three games were hugely reduced. And so it has proved. So when he comes back, I suspect they will all go, right, start again. And you know, I'm not sure what that will prove, except what a potent football player he is. But whatever it is that gives a team confidence, and he will do that, apart from the fact that of all the people who, you know, supposedly replaced him over the past 3 weeks, none of them work as hard as him.
No.
Defensively. You know, he really does defend from the front, that boy. He'll tackle everything. Now, you know, he's a big lad. But, I don't know, it's worrying. I think the root of it is there's a lack of quality. If Gomez was as fit as he was when he first arrived, we wouldn't be having this conversation, I don't think. Because he would be opening people up, and but he's, you know, he's rightly not on the pitch, not after last week's display.
No, absolutely.
You know, and it may well be that, you know, he's never going to get that snap back. And Sigurdsson begins to feel like some sort of bizarre luxury.
Can I throw something at Sigurdsson's defence?
Yeah.
In the position in the position that he played today, if he's, the problem is that he doesn't look up the field. He always tends to look backwards. But if he does look up the field, he didn't have a huge amount of options in front of him.
True.
So, you know, and if you're only just, we said this last week, didn't we? If you're playing DCL as a up by himself, it's very, very easy to mark. And frankly, you know, if you've got nobody further forward, he's got no option but to go sideways or backwards.
Yeah.
We don't have players. Well, we tend not to have players. Certainly in the centre of midfield, we have wing backs that do so, but we don't have players that run ahead of the ball. Certainly when Richarlison's not playing, anyway. Like today, how many times today did you see a midfielder pick up the ball and see another Everton player run past him, looking for the ball? It happened a few times down the wings, and certainly happened with Bernard and Dean in the first half. It happened. But yep. Generally speaking, and certainly from a central position, if we got somebody who was on the ball, nobody was running past that player.
I can remember a couple of times Decore did, but I take your point. But that's confidence as well. You know, when you feel like, you know, you've got this, you can do this, you just find those extra yards and...
Yeah, but George, United... were apparently had less confidence than we did going into the game.
Yeah.
Based on Thursday's performance.
Except that they've won their last 7 away league games in a row.
No, that's absolutely true. But they had players running past the ball.
They did
all day long.
They did. You're right. They looked a very useful team on the break.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they counter-attacked very effectively today.
So, you know, going back to sort of Angelotti's Italian roots, is it sort of, you know, we're not playing well defensively, therefore, you know, we need to hold numbers back. I don't know, anybody listening to this, I don't know the answer to the questions I'm asking. I'm just trying to work out.
That's what makes us all footy fans, Paul. None of us do.
Yeah.
No.
But I can imagine sitting in the main stand or sitting in the upper balcony and, you know, whoever I was with, pointing out the fact that there's nobody running beyond the ball.
Yeah.
So when somebody picks up the ball and, you know, as we said, Sigurdsson tends to look backwards anyway. He plays the ball sideways or backwards. or he's so slow in turning that, you know, United get players back to cover anybody that is ahead of them. I don't know. Ancelotti said a very interesting thing during the week, didn't he? Just moving the conversation on a little bit from today's match. He talked about not being there to develop players. I don't know if you, either of you picked up on this conversation.
I saw something about that on social media that seemed to get a few hackles up.
Yeah, that he wants to succeed. You know, he wants to have players that can deliver for him now. Effectively, you know, paraphrasing what he said, but this is what he said. He certainly said, you know, I'm not here to develop players.
The inference there is he wants instant success. He wants a trophy this year, and if he delivered a trophy this year, then nobody would argue with him. But he's also said he wants to be here, you know, for a long term. Well, yep. If he wants to be here for a long term, then surely part of that long term, he's building for the future, and that's. Part of that is development. We can't just keep going out and spending money like crazy every year. Sooner or later, we've got to bring some players through, or bring players in a lot cheaper than we've currently been spending. So development surely has to be part of his role.
But maybe, just thinking this through further, maybe actually what he's saying is we don't have the development capabilities in this club.
What do you think that means, Paul?
It means that our academy is not good enough. So we're either not scouting the right players, or we're not developing the players once we've got them into the academy.
Right.
Have you got stats on the number of players in the last 5 years, say, who've made it all the way through?
It's something that I'm... in this spare time that I have, I'm doing some research on to see which academies actually produce the greatest number of players. I was sent some stats by somebody the other day, and actually Manchester United are miles ahead of anybody else in this respect. This was for the 2018-19 season, and Everton were very firmly mid-table, and the way it was defined was the number of minutes played in the season by somebody that had come from the academy.
Right.
So United are miles ahead of everybody, and we were sort of 11th or 12th. So, you know, we were sort of, as we quite often are, mid-table in every respect. But thinking about it, maybe that is like a coded message from Ancelotti. I'm not here to develop players. That might mean I'm not here to develop players, or it might mean I don't have the players to develop.
Or it might mean I'm not here to develop players, with the inference being that there are other people here who are supposed to be developing players and they're failing.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah,
because I'm not picking them, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The other interesting, and I'm going to develop this into an article and stuff, but the other interesting bit of information that I picked up doing some research this week was that, and I don't know what the costs are for other teams yet because I don't have the information, but roughly it costs Everton Football Club around about £8 million to develop a player from the academy to actually playing in the Premier League. And that's calculated on the total cost of the academy divided by the number of players that have actually come through. So, in fact, it was in the commentary today that somebody said, talking about, you know, they were talking about Seamus Coleman and said, you know, what a fantastic £60,000 Everton spent. And I think it was McManaman said, yeah, it must be the best buy Everton have ever made, apart from the free players from the academy. Players that come from the academy are not free. You haven't paid a fee for them, but you've spent an awful lot of money.
Yeah, you've spent money on them.
In finding them, training them, and developing them. Because there is an argument to be had as to whether or not having a fantastic academy and developing lots of players, or attempting to develop lots of players, is a better strategy than just going out and buying somebody else's player.
Well, that's interesting, because one of the interesting things in Jamie Carragher's autobiography, I don't know why I read it, but I did, he said that him and Stevie G had come through everything, you know, from schoolboys, they'd done it, and he figured he would probably be one of the last people, because he said the pressure on managers to buy a ready-made replacement is so huge these days. Now, to be fair to Jurgen Klopp, he has not done that, you know, and he has found players from nowhere. And from the look of their reserve team, when we played him in the Cup last year, he's got another load coming as well. So, you know, maybe you're absolutely right, and your inference of what Ancelotti was hinting at is that there's a quality gap here. We're not producing Premiership football players.
Yeah, I mean, without naming individuals, and maybe this is a thing for, you know, a topic of the discussion all by itself in a separate podcast. But if you think about the players that have come through our academy in recent years, there's very, very few who've actually made it in the Premier League.
Yep.
I asked another WhatsApp group the other day the same question, and Rooney was the only answer that people could come up with. Now, I think that's slightly unfair, because I think you could probably say Barkley deserves to be recognised as a Premier League player, if nothing else.
Yeah.
But then after that, you think, well, who else is that? Tom Davis.
Rooney would have appeared, you know, at any stage, at any time. He was an exceptional talent.
Yeah.
I mean, he was blue and all that stuff. Just to go back to Ancelotti, his remarks to the BBC after the game was, we have to stabilise the defence, this is for sure, but it is not a problem individually, it is collective work, and this is absolutely normal. Fortunate that there is an international break. This was a really difficult, bad period for us, and I hope it is finished. I hope we can come back from the international break in the way we started the season. Hear, hear, Carlo.
I mean, listening to those words, that he doesn't sound overly concerned. Maybe that's the difference between an experienced football manager and nutters like
two rabid mangs. Whatever. That is the difference, you butthole.
I mean, thinking about it, and we've talked about his man management capabilities before. There's no point in, you know, having a rant about individual players at the beginning of an international break.
Yeah.
From a man management point of view, mm-hmm. You just say it's been a bad day at the office, or it's been a bad few weeks, and we hope to come back, as you said, with better form when we do come back. There's no point in saying, you know, blah blah blah, I had an absolute stinker.
No, that's the great advantage of his experience, isn't it? He knows all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So there we are.
So now we have 2 weeks to wait before we go to Fulham.
Indeed.
2 weeks to get 2 weeks for everyone to have a little rest, apart from those who are involved in internationals, and hopefully some good time on the training field. And Richarlison comes back, champing at the bit to get back to where he was before he got suspended.
Yep. And I think we've also got to remember that this is a league where we don't think any team is going to actually put a long string of results together. So
everything's still to play for. We just, you know, we've had, let's hope it's our blip. Every team has a blip.
Yep.
You know, let's just hope this has been it. I can't, honestly, truthfully and honestly, I am not surprised that it's happened, because I did think, as soon as Richarlison wasn't there, you went, oh my God, we suddenly look toothless. And the sight of Tosin running onto the pitch, I'm struggling for an image to follow the word toothless.
Well, he always reminds me of one of those massive aircraft, you know, the ones that carry freight, and they sort of they
that
take
look
about
like 50, a whale.
Yeah, they look about no, they take about 15 minutes to get up off the ground, and you think he's never going to get off the ground before the end of the runway.
Oh God! Thank God we don't live in Manchester, Andy.
Oh God, heavens above, yeah. Dear oh Lord. It's bad enough working with a few mags. I'm lucky actually. I've only had one text message already, from a guy. I'll read it to you. Well, I won't read you all of it. He said he didn't see that coming. That was the nice part of it. To be fair, he was pretty magnanimous about it, but I'm sure I'll get some stick on Monday and Tuesday off people. But I just,
well, that's part of being a footy fan too, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is. Of course it is. At the end of the day, you know, if it had been the other way around, I'd have been ripping him as well.
Well, you know, I watched it with a text thread going with my mate Stewie, who's a United supporter, and he said, "Ah, you're just playing the long game, so we keep Ollie."
But that's the daft thing, isn't it? I think there's bucket loads of United fans out there who are actually hoping they'd lose today because they want to see the back of Solskjaer. I mean, it just shows how fickle football fans of all persuasions are, doesn't it?
But the culture of United is so ghastly and horrible. Mind you, sorry, I shouldn't have said that, because, you know, you could say the same thing about aspects of Everton, which are shameful and tacky. And, you know, we all put those things on hold for an hour and a half on a Saturday afternoon, and then we go and lose. What's the point of that? It's supposed to cheer us up, you mad blue... Oh,
good.
George,
that's George, the trouble. You know, a victory today, we'd have all gone to work on Monday, happy as Larry, and, you know, full of the joys of spring and whatnot, and now we're all down. They're all downbeat again, and the first Liverpool fan or United fan who says something on Monday morning is going to get both barrels.
They'll be only too happy to get them, Andy.
Let's finish on this note. If you're a team that desperately needs a victory, if you're a forward who desperately needs a goal, if you're a goalkeeper who desperately needs a good game, you always look in the fixture list to see when you're playing Everton.
Yeah.
We do.
Sadly, there's an element of truth in that, Paul.
We've done it for years.
Who's up next but Fulham away?
we've got people out of holes for years. It's what we do.
I know. God blimey. It was United again. Who was it who signed for United all them years ago and went months and months and months without scoring and then finally broke his duck against Everton? Was it Brian Greenough? God, Jimmy Greenough. Jimmy Greenough, when they signed him from Stoke, and he went months without scoring. And if I remember rightly, it was a Boxing Day at Old Trafford. And because I'll never forget, the seat I was in, there was an hole in the roof and I was being dripped on because it was raining. I was well fed up. There I was in the main stand at Old Trafford, wet, surrounded by reds, and bloody Jimmy Greenough broke his duck. I was well upset. Absolutely. Shocking.
Oh dear, never mind. All right, let's finish it on that note. And I think
just to annoy Harry, will Trump still be in the White House when we get back?
They might still be counting by next week. if we have an international break, TTB, will the count still be on?
Well, there you go. We've found something slower than Tosin. It's the Georgia vote count.
Nobody's talking about Alaska, are they?
I thought that, Andy. I thought if I lived in Alaska, I'd go, right, thanks very much.
Yeah.
I think I might secede.
I think Alaska
well,
are...
I don't want.
Alaska are the Everton of US states. Never get a mention in the press.
Oh, dear.
Oh, well, look,
good job, we can laugh.
Yeah, at least we can laugh.
Keep the faith.
Exactly.
Keep the faith. Richarlison's coming back. We've lost three games. That's enough. That'll do for losing for this season. Thanks very much.
And yeah. We've promised ourselves, and so for the next podcast that people listen to, Talking the Blues, we're going to do our worst 11 ever.
Oof. Yeah.
Okay.
That's good. Now, can we have some criteria on this? Has this got to be players that we've actually seen in the flesh?
Good point.
I think it has to be. I mean, all of these.
Yeah.
They have to be.
Yes, otherwise it's just slanderous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Otherwise, one of you is going to pick my great granddad.
No, we wouldn't be that cruel. But, I mean, bearing in mind, you've been watching the Blues since 63, Harkin. There's a whole lot of scope there.
Oh, dear.
Right.
We've got to pick a team, so it's every position, goalie, all the fullbacks, etc., etc.
Yeah, and you know,
right.
You can even do combinations as well.
Right, okay. I can't wait for a long train journey this week so I can start looking through the record books.
Well, exactly. Will it be Tosin or will it be the Strack, you know?
Well, the odd thing is, of course, that now we're thinking about it, you realise that you put those people on the edit tape in your head. I don't want to remember how bad Bernie Wallace was.
Bernie Wright, you mean?
Bernie Wright, sorry, yeah.
Bernie Wright. From Walsall, oh my God. What was thinking of?
Whereas you can wax lyrical if you went, where does Martin Dobson fit in the pantheon of Everton midfield players? That's a very different conversation than going, I'm trying to rummage up memories of people that I was bilious about. I'm furious about. I'm not sure of the efficacy of this, guys, but anyway.
It could be entertaining.
It should be entertaining, yeah.
All right. Good to speak to you. What can we say? But we will be back and we'll keep the faith and better times ahead.
And stay safe, everybody, as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Cheers, guys.